You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Just gone 8 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good evening from me, Ray White, and for Bruce on The Money Show, which is brought to you by the Old Mutual Investment Group. Invest where the fund managers invest their money. Well, coming up on the show this evening, of course, the best bits of The Money Show. And Bruce was very, very busy this last week. These are the highlights of the money world, you see, and it's very important that you pay attention, because just before 7 o'clock, at about 10 to 7, it'll be time for the Brutal Biz Quiz, courtesy of MTN Business. Enough for grabs, 2,000 Rand. But the reason why you have to listen to the show is because I'll be asking you some brutal questions about the show. And if you're the last person standing, then you go and get yourself 2,000 Rand. So it's very easy. Also, coming up this evening, the Kruger Rand turns 50 years old this year. Maybe you have one. Maybe you bought it many, many years ago. What has been your return on it? I mean, maybe you've got it and you've worked out, okay, you spend 5,000 Rand, say, but now it's worth 10,000 Rand for argument's sake. Do you have that kind of a story? I'd like to hear from you this evening. You can SMS me on 31702 or 31567. You can also give me a call on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567 or just tweet on @RayWhiteSA. I'd love to hear your story about your Kruger Rand this evening. But let's start with water. And water supply in this country has been a problem in the past. Fortunately, the drought inland appears to have been broken, although press statement came out today saying the dam levels have dropped a little bit. The Western Cape still needs more rain. I know that there has been rain in Cape Town, and there was that dramatic picture of lightning striking Table Mountain. But the Western Cape, Cape Town, needs more rain. So water is scarce. What is the solution? James Steer is a visionary who has taken it upon himself to come up with an innovative solution to the water crisis currently facing Africa and South Africa as well. James joins us. Hi, James. Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ray. Thanks so much for having me on.
Now, you're the founder of iDrop Water. What exactly is that?
So iDrop Water is focused primarily on drinking water as a sort of subset of all water. We're a for-profit social impact company, and we are trying to basically transform how drinking water is bought and sold in grocery stores across Africa. The idea, briefly, my background is in water purification technology, and the idea for the company came from traveling all over Africa and seeing just the enormous amount of bottled water that's being sold through grocery stores at really high prices, and it's a very wasteful sort of product. But almost all of these grocery stores also have some kind of water supply. They have a tap. And our simple idea really was to try and find a way of empowering these grocery store owners to efficiently and effectively purify this water that comes out of the tap and sell it by the liter to their shoppers who refill multi-use water containers.
Okay.
So it's not a new idea. It's been around for a little while, but we've completely transformed the business model to enable us to really get this into grocery stores just about anywhere in Africa. So not just your urban, upper income grocery store, everywhere from townships to remote villages.
So these are dispensing machines that, say, go into supermarkets, and then does the supermarket pay for your machine? How does it work?
That's actually one of the innovative elements of our business model. So in order to reach areas where safe drinking water is needed the most, we've developed a business model that allows us to put one of these purifying and dispensing machines into a grocery store at zero cost. We share ongoing sales revenue with the grocery store owner, but by removing that sort of capital burden on the grocery store owner, we can get it into just about any grocery store anywhere. And the way we can do that, this is the sort of really interesting bit of tech we introduced. Obviously, the filtration technology is really effective and efficient, but we've included some GSM remote monitoring and control electronics. So basically a SIM card like you have in your phone. And that allows us to track all of the sales that go through the machine. It gives us a huge amount of data about, diagnostics and all of that. So at the end of the month, we can just send an invoice to the grocery store owner and say, right, we see you've sold X amount of water. Here is our invoice for that share of the water, and through that we can generate enough revenue to recover that capital cost.
Mm. It's very clever. I mean, how has it been received throughout Africa and in this country as well?
Really well. It's great working with grocery store owners because these guys are fantastic entrepreneurs. They understand sort of the value proposition when they see it. So We're growing fast. We've been around for about 18, 20 months. It took quite a long time to develop the system, but we're already growing really well in South Africa and Zimbabwe are good markets for us. But we've piloted already in Botswana, and we've got a pilot system up in Ghana. So the response has been fantastic. I mean, the value proposition for a grocery store is fantastic. There's no more expense on stocking bottled water. There's less shelf space taken up. And, you know, the even though our price point is R1 a liter, the gross profit for a grocery store is 50%. So overall, the shopping economics for the grocery store and the shopper work really, really well.
Yeah. Just to break it down a little bit. So somebody goes into a grocery shop. What happens next?
So we require shoppers to reuse water containers, which, again, is really good for the environment. You're not just selling a plastic bottle that gets used once. So typically a person will have bought a multi-use water container from the grocery store, and then we'll go to one of our machines. The most common transaction size is a 5-liter purchase. They'll fill their 5-liter bottle with water from our machine, take that to the till, and pay in South Africa R5 for that 5-liter refill. So the price point is very low. If they are, you know, if there's a smaller transaction, they're looking for a bigger transaction, they just pay per liter. So, you know, R1 for 1 liter, R10 for 10.
And this water is purified. There's a filtration process, because a lot of people may argue we want our bottled water because we like the spring thing that comes out.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, the interesting thing about that is that a lot of bottled water is really just treated tap water anyway. It goes through treatment processes and you know, is basically equivalent to the water that we purify. But, you know, the issue really is the purification technology we use is really cutting edge. We import our filters from a manufacturer in the United States. And these are ideally suited to Africa. They produce no wastewater, which is very important, and they are incredibly effective at removing any contaminant that's going to get you sick. So virus, bacteria, cysts, it takes care of all of that. But it keeps, you know, minerals in the water, dissolved minerals in the water. That's actually good for your health. So as a product, the water we produce it's not just efficient and affordable, but it's a really good product. You know, we test all of the water that comes out of these machines periodically, and we'll post the full, you know, test data from an independent laboratory on the side of each machine. So every shopper knows exactly what's in the water.
And your company, I see, has also won some awards as well.
Mm. Yeah, so we're really excited about this. We won a competition run by Chivas Regal. It's called the Chivas Venture. We run the South African leg of that, and so we are now part of a global competition, one of 30 countries around the world that will be competing in LA in July for a share of $750,000. So a really kind of game-changing opportunity that for us. But it's been an amazing experience to go through. There's a real emphasis and a drive we're finding on social entrepreneurship and companies that are trying to grow good businesses that are tackling big social challenges. And that's the real emphasis of that competition. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that coming up in July. Mm,
sounds fascinating. James, do you have a website that people can go and look you up?
We absolutely do, yeah. It's idropwater.com, and it's idropwater.com. I'm also going to say that if there are any grocery store owners out there, we'd really love to hear from you. We're going out fast, and you know, we're really trying to grow our footprint, not just in the big city centers, but grocery stores, you know, across South Africa. We'd love to help empower them to sell drinking water like this.
That sounds really good. Really good. James Steer, founder of iDrop Water. Thanks for joining us, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Ray.
The Money Show.
The Money Show.
On your number one news and talk station.
From water to Kruger Rands. Now, the Kruger Rand turns 50 this year. The first 22-carat, 1-ounce Kruger Rand gold coin was minted on the 3rd of July in 1967. So I put it out then. I said to you, do you have any Kruger Rands? Maybe you bought one 50 years ago. Some of the SMSs. One says, I bought my Kruger Rand for just 50 Rand in the 70s. That's from Joy. For 50 Rand. Wow. I hope you still got it. I'm sure you have. Another one says, hi, Ray. As a younger teller at the Standard Bank in 1977, I was issued with 5 Kruger Rand coins in my float, which could be purchased over the counter for the pricey sum of 7,200 Rand. So if you think about what's happened since then, that's a lot of money. And another person says, yeah, hi there. Nobody wants to buy the Kruger Rands or any gold at the price published for the day. It's very disappointing investment, says Saki in Four Ways. Keep your SMSs coming on 31702 or 31567. On the line, we've got the chairperson of the SA Gold Coin Exchange and the Coin Shops, Alan Denby. Hi, Alan. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Is the Kruger Rand the most
Ray.
Is the Kruger Rand the most traded and collectible gold coin, outselling its nearest rival?
Absolutely. In fact, as you quite rightly said, in 1967 they introduced the first Kruger Rand. They actually sold it at the Rand Easter Show, and I don't think anybody would accept selling gold coins at a agricultural show, but they sold it for 27 Rand 50 in 1967. In the interim, they sold about 65 million coins all around the world. The biggest market is really America, followed by Germany. And today, they are valued at about 19,000 Rand each. So as a collectible or investment or a store of value, I think that Kruger Rands and gold coins have certainly shown their mettle.
The country has evolved. We now have former President Nelson Mandela here, the Nelson Mandela coin. Is it getting more popular than the Kruger Rand, or not really?
Well, we were fortunate enough to get the rights from the Mint of Norway and the Nobel Institute about 13 years ago. And we've been selling many of these medallions, F.W. de Klerk, Desmond Tutu, Nelson Mandela, and a whole host of other winners. And I think over the years, people have been buying many of these medallions in the main to celebrate the winners. And if you think about it, only one winner, there's only one winner a year, except, of course, when there are two winners, such as Nelson Mandela and F.W. de Klerk. And I think provided you collect the coins for the long term, you will always do well. Just to give you an idea, over 100 years ago, they minted the so-called ZAR coins from 1892 to 1902. Now, they have a face value of £1 and £2 in those, or 1 rand and 2 rand.
Right.
And they were sold at a small premium. Today, those coins are worth between a million and several million rand. So, admittedly, it's taken over 100 years to reach those values. But indeed, they have appreciated in value. So I think if you take a long-term position, be it art, collectibles, cars, watches, and coins and stamps for that matter, you will do okay. You know, if you're looking to trade the market and play the market, you can be rest assured that you will lose money. And if you buy coins or art with borrowed money, if you buy more than you should or could, then if you then become a forced seller, then of course you are going to be unhappy with it. So, you know, if you collect for the long haul, well, you said it yourself.
Yeah.
In 1967, the first Kruger Rand came out. Only 10,000 of these coins were minted at 27 Rand 50. And lo and behold, 50 years later, they're trading somewhere between 18,000 Rand and 30,000 Rand or more.
Sure.
For the scarce and rare proof coin. So it is a good store of value, and particularly in South Africa now where we have a lot of political and economic uncertainty. Although having said that, I think there's a lot of political and economic uncertainty around the world now with what's going on in many countries overseas. So from that point of view, it's certainly a good store of value. In fact, even silver today at about $18 an ounce is quite an interesting play, if that's the right word, or long-term store of value. In fact, in America, the people are very distrustful of the government, and people buy lots and lots of silver coins. although they don't trust the country, they actually buy their silver coins from the US Mint. And last year they bought about or sold 30-odd million silver one-ounce coins. So that's just in 1 year. So there is a huge interest in precious metals.
Let's take a call. John in Menland. Hi, good evening, John.
Hi, I just want to say that the prices that your guests are quoting aren't quite real. I had a 1967 Kruger Rand, which I sold earlier on this year, a few weeks ago, in order to help pay for my daughter's wedding. And I sold it to one of his shops, and his price was the best I could get, so kudos there. But it was an absolute fraction of the 90,000 that he quoted.
Alan?
Absolute fraction.
90,000. I didn't mention 90,000. I'm not sure what your listener said.
We can listen to the podcast.
Okay,
that's what it sounded like over the radio.
So you didn't get your return, in other words, John?
No, not at all. There was a brilliant return if you look at the 36 rand it cost by day.
Sure.
But the prices that they're sold for versus the prices that you can sell them for yourself, if you want to go the safe route and sell it to someone like this coin shop, they're very different.
Okay.
Very different.
I can't recall what the pricing was, but for the 67s, I know that we pay quite a substantial premium, and I don't know if it was an order of 25 or 30,000 rand, but it would have certainly been the best price in the market. But, I'm not sure when the deal was transacted, but as you say, as your listener says, that was quite a substantial return. So good luck to him.
If someone wants to trade in their coin, their coin, do they go to the coin shop? Should they do it privately? What is the best deal to get? Because there are lots of people going around there these days trying to rip people off.
I don't think it's any different from any other industry, be it the art or the diamond business. But I think you should deal with dealers who have been around for a substantial amount of time. I think it's fair to say that we, the coin shops and the South African Gold Coin Exchange, pride ourselves in the fact that we pay the best prices for coins at any moment in time. Okay. But I do agree that, one should be wary of doing a deal with a chap on the corner, someone who offers you cash, somebody who offers you a hell of a lot more than the going price, because if, as they often say, if the deal is too good to be true, well, it usually is.
It probably is. Okay. We'll have to leave it there. John in Menland, thanks for your call. And Alan Demby, chairperson of the SA Gold Coin Exchange and Coin Shops, thanks for joining us on The Money Show.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
The Money Show.
The markets.
So let's see what happened with your markets today. Joining us is the portfolio manager at Vestact Asset Management, Michael Traherne. Hi, Michael. Good evening. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Ray, great to be here.
So Mediclinic up 14% today because they had a little look at the United Arab Emirates.
Yeah, great to see. The shares were actually up yesterday already because Mediclinic trades in London as well as South Africa. So if you were sitting short Mediclinic on Freedom Day, I don't think it was a great Freedom Day for you. But yes, shares up 14% today, and that's because Abu Dhabi's come out and said the co-payment that patients had to pay if they went to private healthcare, the state will now cover that co-payment, so no co-payments. Mediclinic management forecast that that co-payment that was introduced, it was actually middle of last year, was going to cost the group around 540 million rand just in revenue. So not a small number, and I think the group's very relieved to see that co-payment removed, and as shareholders, the share prices reflected that.
Yeah, it's worked for them. And then Coronation, worth billions and billions of rands.
Yeah, so unfortunately their assets under management have been ticking slowly down over the last 2 years. March 2015, they had 636 billion under management. Fast forward to March 2017, I use the word only, but that's not quite the word.
Yeah.
They only have 576 billion, so that's down 10% over 2 years, but still a monster in the game. And look, they're not doing badly and they're still producing lots of money for their shareholders. The problem's coming in outperformance. Lots of fees are made through outperformance, and their funds haven't outperformed over the last couple of years, which means that their fees are down. That means that the share price has been struggling. It's, to few years ago, it was at just over 100 rand a share, now trading in the mid-50s.
Sure, sure. Bad news, but yeah, you're right, they're worth a lot. And then Naspers doing very well today as well.
Yeah, so Naspers are 0.6. So they actually reached 12-month highs. That's great to see, and partly because the investment in Tencent, which basically comprises of the entire market cap, Tencent at 12-month highs, which means Naspers at 12-month highs and a weaker rand, also supporting the Naspers share price because Tencent listed in Hong Kong and obviously converting from Hong Kong dollars into rands, Naspers appreciates from that. Don't forget that if you buy Naspers now, you also get a chunk of Tesla because Tencent owns 5% of Tesla, so that's really an exciting thing.
Yeah.
That's great. To see South Africans can now buy into Tesla.
Yeah, good news there. And then just one final question. It's something that's worrying me a little bit is North Korea. And Donald Trump saying he's not ruling out military action. He'll try the diplomacy route, which is very worrying. How would this affect the markets?
Yeah, so Warren Buffett was interviewed at the beginning of the year going, what do you worry about politicians? And he basically said politicians come and go, but nuclear weapons, once they detonate, that hangs around for a long time. So it's the volatile nature of what North Korea will do. No doubt if they declared war, North Korea would be rubble within a day, I reckon. But it's people in Seoul, in South Korea, I think, that are most nervous at the moment because they're right near the border. And you never know what North Korea would do before they are reduced to rubble. So, look, I think that our world leaders know what's at stake. And I think China will be the buffer between North Korea and the U.S. And I think sanity will prevail at the end of the day.
I really, really hope so. Portfolio Manager at Vestact Asset Management, Michael Chahoun. Thanks for your time on The Money Show and have a great weekend.
Cool. Thanks, you too, Ray.
The Money Show on 702.
Your number one news and talk station.
This is Ray White in for Bruce Whitfield on the next Money Show, the May Day edition. I'll talk to Martin van Staden from the Free Market Foundation about radical economic transformation in relation to workers, taking a look at the FinTech book. And then our Make Money Monday's guest is Donovan Goliath of the stand-up comedy outfit Goliath and Goliath. All this and more coming up on your next Money Show.
702 and Cape Talk.
The Money Show.
And Ray in for Bruce on The Money Show. It's brought to you by the Old Mutual Investment Group. Invest where the fund managers invest. Time now for the best bits of The Money Show. This is Bruce's highlights from this weekend. We play you a few bits just to make sure that you've been listening because the Brutal Biz Quiz is coming up. And if you haven't, well, you can hear the best of right now. So David Lewis, Executive Director of Corruption Watch, was this week's Make Money Monday guest. He revealed to Bruce why money was a bit of a sensitive issue at home when he was growing up.
You know, it wasn't so much that it was an uncomfortable discussion topic. It was just not a necessary topic, although I'd have come to learn that it was probably quite uncomfortable. I think that my parents, as I said, did suffer some pretty tight financial circumstances, and I think they were either not wanting to burden their kids with it or maybe a little embarrassed to reveal it to us. So we never had to talk about it. I mean, there's also quite a funny relationship in our family with money, in the sense that my paternal grandfather came from a very, very wealthy family.
Ooh,
and he lost it all on the race course.
No.
And so that was like a little bit of a sort of, what do they call it, a large Indiana skeleton in our closet, I suppose.
No, I mean, it's tragic, isn't it? I mean, have you gone into it in any great detail? Have you tried to understand what his motives were or how he got struck down by the gambling disease?
Well, you know, I think he was an heir, you know, to a sort of fairly significant milling fortune, I think. And he was a gentleman, and he don't think he worked a lot. He was a very charming man. I don't think he worked very much at all. And he did have this bevy of race courses who I think are still running, you know. But it didn't ever seem to bother him. But I mean, you know, later in his life, he was being supported by my parents who really were struggling to support themselves and their kids. So maybe all those things added up to us not talking that much about money. But it kind of meant that it wasn't a driving force in me deciding what it was that I wanted to do. And my parents were very willing to try in whatever way they could to accommodate what it is that I wanted to do, and that wasn't, as it so happened, earning very much money.
Well, was there a sense of any resentment in your household? I mean, where mum and dad sort of sat looking at granddad going, oh,
oh yeah.
It could have all been so different. It could have been so different.
From my mum, I think there was, certainly. Okay.
Was it her dad or your
mother? No, it was
dad?
My father's dad. Yeah.
Okay, so the daughter-in-law is getting hard done by.
Yeah.
I mean, and that also, you know, sort of can cloud a household. It can cloud the dinner table. It can make life difficult.
No, it never really did that. But but there was a definite sense that, you know, if Pop, as we used to call him, had done a day's work in his life and bought better racehorses, you know, he was in the milling business, and the sort of equivalent families, I think, were the sort of, you know, the Tiger Oates's and the Premier Millings, the Blooms and the Jaffies and whatever. And, you know, from my grandfather, there was always a sense that these are people who didn't know how to
sign
a signature, you know. And I think one of them now owns H. Lewis and Company, or whatever it was called. So that didn't really cloud things a lot, but it was definitely in the ethos from time to time.
That was David Lewis, the executive director of Corruption Watch. And then Dr. Cheryl Calder, visual performance specialist and the founder of the iGym, was this week's shapeshifter. She played a rather crucial role with golfer Ernie Els. She helped him win the 2012 British Open instead of retiring. She told Bruce about this experience.
Ernie was at a point where he decided that's it, he's not going to play anymore because his putting was so bad. And I actually caught up with him at a tournament and said to him, just do a few putts. And I saw that it really was not nearby standard, but it was a combination of what he was seeing, because it got to a point where a lot of people were saying to him, you can't judge anymore. And if you can't judge, you can't putt, because, you know, you have to judge line and length, etc. And then that information, obviously, we needed him to concentrate better, and we needed him to take that information, put it into his hands. His hands at that point weren't great, so we worked on a combination of all those skills. And if you saw that last putt on the 18th at that British Open, then you'll know that he was back to full fitness.
And you're in the background of all of these great sports teams. You're clearly being taken very, very seriously in what is predominantly a male environment. How hard was it to get acceptance?
You know, I think it's tough, you know, being a woman in those environments. But for me, I didn't even think like that. I just thought that I am an individual offering a certain skill to enhance your performance. And if I'm a guy or girl, doesn't matter. You know, it's about what I'm teaching you. So I had to be brave at times. I was discredited at times, but didn't really matter.
That was Dr. Cheryl Calder, the visual performance specialist and founder of the iGym. And then Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa finally found his voice and has been speaking out and speaking up against some of the shenanigans happening with our country's leadership. He's also seemingly thrown his hat into the ring for the ANC's leadership race. Bruce asked political economist Nick Borain why it took Ramaphosa so long.
He is the president, the deputy president of the ANC and the deputy president of the country. And in those roles, his role, his primary function is to support the president. And both in government and in the ANC, they are sticklers for process. And you can sink or swim on making a mistake that you can be bussed for by those who are looking at process and whether you have broken etiquette and those forms of discipline. And I think he's played a really, really careful game, making it clear where he stands. Well, sorry, not very clear, but making awaiting his moment. We've got a long, we've got, you know, 7 months to go, 6 months to go, that would have been any additional time would have been time where he could have been undermined and attacked. He doesn't have a strong constituency. He's building up a constituency around Kasatu, around the SACP, around the Gauteng ANC, around Eastern Cape. So he needed that momentum. He needed that base. Look, he wasn't that forthright either, I think, in Uten Hag yesterday. He was still Cyril Ramaphosa. I don't think he's going to be that kind of candidate. I don't think he will be Jalema Motlanthe with that kind of very principled caution either. But I think he will build up momentum slowly.
And that was Nick Berain, their political economist, speaking to Bruce this week. And those are the best bits of The Money Show.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
So I hope you have been listening, because it's time for the brutal Biz Quiz, courtesy of MTN Business. Up for grabs, 2,000 Rand, courtesy of MTN Business. And this is how it works. You have to be the last person standing. So give me a call, 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. I'll ask a series of questions, and if you are the last person standing, you get yourself 2,000 Rand, courtesy of MTN Business.
The Money Show.
The Biz Quiz.
The brutal Biz Quiz, 2,000 Rand up for grabs. Right, question number one. How old is the Krugerrand turning this year? We've had it on the show. Let's see if you've been paying attention. Paul in Somerset West. Hi, good evening.
50 years.
Absolutely correct. Quite right, 50 years. All right, question number two. General Electric built which nuclear power plant which exploded 31 years ago this week? Which power plant?
Oh, yes. I heard that. In America. There was no Long Island there.
No, Paul, no. I'm afraid no. Okay, which one exploded 31 years ago this week? Let's go to Trish in Randburg. Hi, Trish.
Hi, is it Chernobyl?
It is indeed. It is indeed. This week marked the 31st anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster. Okay, Trish, here we go. Which luxury shoe brand made popular by TV character Carrie Bradshaw has put itself on sale this week? Luxury shoe brand. If you go into any of the big luxury shoe brand shops, you'll see them there.
Is it Jimmy Choo?
It is indeed. It is indeed. Trish, you are on an absolute, you're on a roll over here. Okay, I'm going to do, this is very hard. This is very difficult. All right, now think about what happened in the news this week. Who is, this is why it's brutal, who is Judge Lee Bozalek? Why is he in the news? Judge Lee Bozalek, what did he do this week? He's so important. What was the big story? Okay, Judge Lee Bozalek. Why is he in the news this week? What did he do this week? What was the big ruling that he did this week? Come on, Trish.
Isn't it about the nuclear deal?
Yes, it is. Well done, Trish. And that's it. You've won. I'm going to leave it there. I'm just going to leave it there. You've won. You've won yourself 2,000 Rand. Are you going to go get yourself some Jimmy Choo shoes?
I would love to.
Ah, good idea. Trish in Randburg.
Oh, thanks so much.
There you go. Just hold the line for us. We can get your details. There we go. Jimmy Choo Shoes. And that was valued at £700 million. The luxury shoemaker has faced some hardships in the luxury retail market. Brokers have even described 2015 as a year to forget for the shoe brand made popular by celebrities. It did, however, get a boost in revenues and profits in 2016 thanks to strong sales across Asia coupled with the Brexit hit pound. So well done to Trish. When you're a CIO in a growing corporate, the job you do affects the work of everyone in the company, and their ability to work affects food on plates. But you knew that, of course. MTN knows that between the successes and failures, the courage to continue is what counts. MTN also knows that food is on other people's plates because your job is to make them able to do theirs. The courage to grow is business. MTN has the advisors, the products and solutions that enable you to do so. Just go to mtnbusiness.com/ZA to grow your business today. Wrapping up the Money Show, and we were talking about Krugerrands, and I'll leave you with one SMS from Gail. She says, "Hi Ray, I bought my husband a Krugerrand for 28 Rand for our wedding anniversary. Thought it was pricey as I took the money from my housekeeping. Fortunately, he still has it. We've been married now for 54 years. A really good investment in both him and the coin." Gail, have a lovely weekend. It's 7 o'clock.